Bills, let's not beat around the bush. You've had cybersecurity issues. You've had your Twitter account famously hacked by Tiga Tuari, but you haven't had any incidents since. What's happened?
No, I haven't. I lost 10,000 plus followers that day when Tiga Tuari hacked into my Twitter account, but I don't have that problem anymore because I use NordVPN. And NordVPN has doubled down on keeping not just me, but everybody safe with their new threat protection feature. Say goodbye to intrusive website ads and malware. Even if you download an infected file using NordVPN, the threat protection kicks in and deletes it before it even makes it onto your computer. So the cybersecurity in NordVPN is one of the highlights of this VPN, not just to mention you can see whatever sports you want from all around the world. You can watch your favorite anime. You don't have to go to Japan just to watch anime. You can do it from your home now using NordVPN. So I suggest to our listeners, we all need VPNs. We all use VPNs. Go to nordvpn.com/social distance. You'll get a huge discount off your NordVPN plan, plus 4 months free. And it's a completely risk-free as well, Jonesy. It's a 30-day money-back guarantee.
Well, I'll tell you, one bloke who needs it, GB, the amount of viruses he's been getting on his old lappy.
You know me, mate. I'm big on anime. So pretty stoked. I don't have to keep flying to Japan for that.
Welcome back to the Social Distance Podcast, everyone. George is currently just about to roll down the start ramp in UAE Tour for Stage 2 time trials. So we've got Daryl Impey, our forever loyal fill-in. He comes on. We talk about us as DSs together and down under. We just talk about DS groups in general, how they work. How do race programs get decided? How do we decide which races we go to? Do we get paid bonuses? No, we don't. But we talk all about that. We talk about rider bonuses, economics of cycling. Should it be more transparent? Whole bunch of different things. And Daryl talks about the amount of spiders he's been killing in Sydney because he's shit scared. Like, share, subscribe.
Let's just run the intro and wing it like we always do and see what comes out of it.
Let's get ready to rumble! Front kick.
Just getting pulled in the basketball chat.
My radar's going pretty hard at the moment, I think.
Will you shut up, man?
That escalated quickly.
We're going to need to get some more qualified guests on this, shall we?
The best thing about having Impson sit in the wings is he always says yes. Like George is a couple of hours away from lining up in a time trial at UAE Tour. And given the fact there's about a shit ton of cybersecurity hoops to jump through in UAE, it's not possible to get him on the show. But Daz always says yes. So he's our loyal fill-in. And I mean, you're more than a fill-in. You're more than a fill-in, but for lack of a better term.
Honorary member.
Yeah. Well, you're an honorary Australian now too. Like, yeah, exactly. I think we were touching on that last time you're on the show, like the big move to Sydney, but mate, it's happened now. I'm you know, my inbox is flooded with you networking in Sydney. You're mate, everywhere, mate.
I'm on 8G at the moment. Not 5G. I'm 8G. The funny thing is that, you know, George is always talking about, like, you know, remember last time we did the ep, well, when I was last on it, George kind of said, like, I didn't let Israel down with points. But, like, if you turn the Social Distance Podcast around on him, I think he's letting you boys down a fair bit, eh? What's he bringing to the party? He was saying that I wasn't bringing any points to the party, but, I mean, what's he bringing?
I mean, to be fair, you didn't. You brought, like, 7. But if we ran like a UCL,
he was going to bring 600 by this time last year.
if we ran a UCI point system just purely based on appearances on the Social Distance Podcast, like you'd be behind George Daz, but you'd be snapping at the heels.
Yeah, I've caught a couple fishing lines that have been thrown out by Jonesy. I've come on those ones, the fishing ones, and.
But no matter what you're doing, even if you're on a ride, you'll stop what you're doing just to get the quick check-in. Like, mate, loyal.
I know you guys need me. That's what it's about. It's about knowing that your mates need you.
Well,
do you know what it is? It's that because you're living in Australia now, you're on the same time zone as Jonesy, and generally me and George are on the same time zone. We can't operate more than two time zones across three people. So that's kind of the idea behind it. At least from my side.
We could have done this morning, but we had our team conference call, so like we couldn't take that slot.
Yeah. Fuck, yeah. I laughed at that call last night when we had a sports director's call. And one of the directors asked Daryl, what time is it where you are, Daryl? And Daryl was on mute, and he was talking, and but he was on mute. And then eventually they're like, oh, you're on mute, Daryl. And then he just eventually unmutes and just goes, oh, sorry. Yeah, it's 5 a.m.
That's early. That's an early conference call.
Yeah, mate. That's when I come up with all my great wisdom. That's where Down Under plan was hashed, mate. That's where it came, all that wisdom.
That's what I wanted to bring up, because the punters haven't heard your version of events. We saw in the last potty, we showed highlights in the car. You know, Bewley did get a lot of the credit, let's be honest, for that win. There was
he was the main dog.
What's the real story, Daryl? Unfiltered.
You know, Jonesy, Sam and I work really well together. It was actually good synergy there. I think it's quite rare that you get to work with your mates. And a good mate, you know. So like, where I probably would have dropped the ball, or just kind of, you know, working with someone else new, maybe they wouldn't have given me so much leeway when I came in. But Sam kind of picked up the little bit of areas where he felt like I slacked. Well, not slacked, but I just didn't know what to do.
There were some parts
where like you just, oh, I didn't think of that. Like, oh, I forgot I had to do that. Like, and he would just pick up those pieces, and then it's easy, you know. Then you just kind of just. Like the whole week, it wasn't about, like, I didn't feel there was an issue with us being like DS1, DS2. It was more like we were in it together. We were a team, you know? So it was good, man. It was good to, I know how important Down Under is for everybody. And I've been on both sides. I've actually been on so many sides of Down Under. So now to be on the director's winning side. And then, oh, cool, man. It was such a cool week. It was so cool.
From my side, it was just finally good to win Down Under with you, Daz, because I wasn't there either of the times you did. So
yeah.
At least we did together once. For now.
Exactly.
Once for now.
Once for now. We're going back next year. Back to back, baby. You know what? I actually fucked up in that thing when I said back to back. I don't know where that came from.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Like, hey, back yeah, yeah. to back.
I was thinking that.
Actually, Corbin came to me. He's like, yeah, what was the back to back thing? I was like, I don't know why I said that. and then afterwards I was like, well, Stevie, well, you know, like, it's back-to-back wins with Stevie, because like I've only done two races at that stage. I've only done two races with Stevie. One was in Norway when I was his teammate riding and he won, and now director and he won. So I was like, oh, we can claim that if someone like really gets like quirky,
you know. Really,
yeah, well,
stretching,
you know? Yeah, well, yeah. I have no idea why I said that, but anyway.
The best yard to come out of that Tour Down Under was the pie story. Is that your biggest fuck up for the week? The pies at the feed zone?
I've never seen someone stress so much, mate. Like, he's like, he goes, hey, this is a fuck up. We should have gone now. I'm like, yeah, well, the pie's coming. Like, and Yarick's at the car. I'm like, well, bro, you can't just drive off. Yarick's at the car now. So, yeah, well, we should be getting on the road now, you know, like, we should be going. And like, Phoebe's like people are trying to stop the cars. We've got this three pies thing there. And Yarick's just like, not sure what to do. And Sam's like, bro, just go. I'm like, we can't just go. Like, and then we all got, and then he's like, then someone said something on the radio, and he was like,
yeah.
now they need us. I said, no, man, I think they were just asking something. And then he was like, he was actually quite panicked. Eh? Like, I actually didn't expect that from such an experienced director, someone who's been doing it for a year, you know?
Yeah.
It was more the point that it was like, if something went wrong, we had no fucking leg to stand on. Why weren't we there? We were getting a fucking pie.
Pies.
You know? It was like, it wasn't like we were barraged or we couldn't get past a whole bunch of riders or like this, like, you know, things that happen often. It was like, we stopped to get a pie.
You know what you need? It's the same thing. You stop for a person, things can happen too.
Yeah.
Like, you stop for a person, things can happen. Like, anything can happen. So I kind of put that as the same thing. Like, okay, we stop for a pee, you know?
Everyone does it. It's just,
you know,
it was
when
just,
you broke was... down. I was listening to an audiobook the other day with David Goggins. Yeah, he's a mad dog. But what he does, he plans for every scenario before it happens, before he starts. So you need to prepare for every scenario where it's like, all right, we've ordered these pies, but if for whatever reason we can't get the pies within 5 seconds, we go. You know,
I generally try to do that with strategy. I always try to do like, yeah, but what if this person doesn't get over the climb and the other director might go, no, but he will. But yeah, but what if he doesn't? What's the plan then?
You've got to apply
but
to
I've never thought
though.
About what happens Pies. If the DS who's driving in his first ever race stops on the wrong side of the road and we have to spend 2 minutes waiting to get pies.
I didn't even know she was standing there for the pies, and just saw Phoebe and you're like, stop. And I was like, oh, stop, wait, where? And then I just like went, you know, just natural. Stopped on the wrong side. Yeah.
And it is kind of hard over there because it is quite confusing because pies aside, Convoy's on the left-hand side of the road, which is obviously the opposite to Europe. You're on the right-hand side of the road. And in Europe, the cars are on the right-hand side of the road, and everything's that's happening on the edge of the road. So feed zone, or if you have to stop to puncture, all of that happens on the right-hand side of the road. So the whole everything is on the same side of the road. Whereas in Australia, you have to drive on the left-hand side of the road, but they're feeding on the right-hand side of the road just for logistical ease of European peloton. So when cars stop in the feed zone, which happens every single feed zone, to pick up musette bags or more ice socks or more bottles or whatever it is, you're already there. But this time you actually have to go across the road. So it is a little bit confusing. So I can understand the fuck up. Yeah.
Now that we've got you on, Daryl, I think we dedicated a whole show when Billy transitioned outside of being a professional bike rider into the DS. How have you found, now that you're not forced to ride X amount of Ks a week, are you saying that you still need to sweat, still need to hit the track, or are you enjoying the whole freedom of like, fuck it, don't have to ride it, I'll do whatever I want?
No, I don't. I don't like put any pressure on training at all. I don't even call it training anymore. It's just exercise. So I got some guys I ride with here, and it's fun. No pressure or anything. And it actually meant, seriously, when I was looking at like the down under start list, like going there for riders, and I was thinking, oh, if I was a rider now, I'd be shitting myself. Because it's just like, you see all the sprinters there, and you think about, oh, which guy you got to lean against, and which team you got to fight. And you know, like, Bora's going to be there, and there's going to be Mullen, and he's going to be pushing people. And you just like, you just know everyone's going to be annoying each other. And it's just like, I'm actually glad I'm out of that space now. You know, I think I just had enough of it. Like, I used to love racing. When I was racing, it was awesome. I miss feeling fit. That's the only thing. Like, I miss feeling like, wow, geez, on top of it, when you go riding, you feel great. Now, like, the heels hurt. I get to like 2 hours and I'm like, I just want to go home. I think, like, how the hell did I ride 5 hours? You know, like, it almost seems impossible nearly. I'm enjoying being with the kids and stuff, man. Like, I miss the camaraderie. Like, it was weird. Like, winning down under as on the team as a DS compared to rider, like, you still have great emotions. But, like, I realize, like, when you win as a rider in a team, like, you still as riders, like, you know, you still, like, celebrate together. You don't always include the staff straight away. The riders will still like have their beers together and do their thing because they've done it, you know. And I kind of like realized then, like, oh yeah, this is the big change, like the big difference. Whereas like when you're a rider, you kind of just like, oh, we're gonna have beers in the room and we organize, and then like maybe Whitey or someone would have come in and then like just joined us. But you don't, it's not the same, like, you know. It was weird, but it was still like super like. You know, it was unexpected for us. We knew we had a chance, but to pull the wool over everyone's eyes and just like get it done, it was good.
Do you know what the hardest thing is, I reckon, that I found, and you probably found, I don't know if it's, maybe it's not hard, but it's an interesting dynamic, is like, especially with the group we had it down under. So like, I didn't race with those guys because I never raced on Israel Premier Tech. But like, they're still my peers in some ways because of the age, and I did race in the peloton with them. And you know, there's obviously George is there. He's a good mate of mine. You know, like a good relationship with Stevie, good relationship with Corbin, with Clarkie. You know, all of those guys. But then you've got the extra dynamic, Daryl, where you raced with them in the same team, like you roomed with some of those guys, and you do create like a friendship and a relationship that's. You're equals. You're both bike riders, and you both have the same complaints, and you both have the same, you know, everything else. And then when you have to be a director, you're still their mate, and you have to be their mate. I think it's really important. It creates that really good atmosphere and vibe that we had in Australia. But there still has to be that little line there at a certain point where you've got to sometimes go like come down on something, or make a decision on something, or let somebody down with a decision you have to make. Or you know, and that's where it gets really hard, I think, is when you have to say to someone, you know, it could be your best mate in a situation where you have to say, I know you want to have a crack today, but we're going for someone else, you know, and that yeah. kind of stuff's hard. And that's the stuff that takes a little bit of time to get used to. I mean, and you're naturally pretty good at that because you were like that anyway as a writer. But it is an interesting dynamic to approach and sort of manage, I reckon.
Just on that, yeah, I was just going to say, you know how in most teams there's always writers that you can see are sniveling to get in good with a certain director so they get almost, you know, spoon-fed good races, all this sort of shit. Can you almost pick up on that with writers, or is that one a thing of the past? Like writers nowadays, the modern day, don't even think like that.
It's not like riders kind of sucking up to you or whatever. It's more like they want you to ask the questions they don't want to ask. But like you're pushing it a bit now, mate. Like, you know, like I'm not going to ask if you can fly this way instead of that way. Like, you're just being a little bit difficult now or whatever. Then you kind of just got to go like, actually, no, ask yourself. You know, and then that's kind of where you put the barrier. You go like, no, I'm not going there. Then they know like, all right, I'm not going to push him just to do all my dirty work all the time. You know, like, because it's harder for them to say, oh, listen, what's the reason? Like, I could say, oh, because so-and-so doesn't want to fly this way, you know, but he's just, I think that's where they push the boundaries a little bit. Like they try and push a little bit of the mates thing or program like which way they want to go. Or like, oh, I don't want to do that race. See if I can get out of that race. And you're like,
yeah,
I can see why. If I was a rider, I would be saying like, oh yeah, man, that's a shit race. I don't want to go to that race either. Like, oh, you're down on that? Oh, I would try everything to get off it, you know? But like now as a director, you kind of like see it and you're like, I can see why they expect you to go there, because you're going to be needing to help someone or there's an objective there and we actually need you. That's where it's like hard to deal with. Yeah.
I used to think, I've been doing it for a year, but for a little while I thought to myself like, they're pushing the friendship card, this person or that person. But actually I've changed my tune a little bit on that. And like, I don't think they are pushing the friendship card. I think it's just because you have a good relationship, they're more comfortable to ask you things.
Yeah.
Because I think it's more that sometimes that they're more comfortable to come to you with these questions or with these concerns because of your relationship with them. And Daryl's right that like when you're a rider, you've got tunnel vision and you're like, why the fuck do I have to go there? I don't want to go there. But then actually behind the scenes, there's a whole bunch of other things happening and there's always a reason. And there's always generally a very good reason why something is happening. And as long as you're educated and you've done the due diligence and you've spoken to, you know, the head sports director or the mechanic or whoever it is about that particular thing, and you understand it well, then you can actually tell the rider pretty clearly, no, this is why it's happening this way. And generally they understand. But you, if you don't know the answer and you're like, oh, yeah, because this, that, and then you kind of lose the crowd a little bit. But if you just know straight away, like, this is why it's happening, boom, 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 this is the reasons behind it, generally they go, oh, okay, makes sense. So that's a big part of it, I think. It's just understanding and just being just knowing that, you know, people, they feel comfortable to come to you, Daryl, or to me, or whoever it is, you know, and ask different things. So that, I reckon that's more what it is than so much than pushing the friendship card.
Do you reckon the number one breakdown, right? And this is just what I observed with, say, Green Edge. That's my only experience, is communication. Number one, if communication goes to shit and you're not open and constantly talking to riders, that's number one reason why they get the nose out of joint. Like you were talking before about riders, they're normal. They don't want to do certain races or whatever. But as long as there's constant communication flow and you always feel like you're in the loop, I feel that if the rider goes through a career and it gets to a point where they feel like they're not in the loop, that's not one of the number one causes of a breakdown with that. And if then it spews. And if one rider's got a nose out of joint, they talk to other riders and then it spreads.
I think it's communication is important, but I think it's also like just riders to be comfortable that they know you're on their side as well when you have to be. When there's a reason to be on their side, they know you like fully back them. I think that's important. And I think like having raced with these guys and also Sam coming off the, you know, the peloton so like recently, I think we had, that was our advantage in like a race like Down Under, and us being able to like also like be a part of these guys. Like when we were playing cricket and that in between like Cadell Evans and that, like just for fun, like we were there, you know, we were bowling to them. It wasn't this like director rider split. It was kind of like we're all just mates like playing cricket together. And I think being fresh and younger in the peloton, that gives, it allows you to get that advantage. So if you exploit it and you kind of use it, I think that you can get a really good like advantage. And I think a lot of, you know, then when you come into the race plan, race strategy, and they see us like not every night, just like, you know, they see us like during the day, like, okay, we're having fun at night, but they know we've been doing other things and like been on top of everything and there's nothing missing. Then they kind of feel like, oh, geez, these guys are backing us 100%. So I think it also comes down to like having a good team that goes like, that the boys feel so comfortable around.
Mm. And like on top of that communication thing, like, yeah, communication is really important. Sometimes things don't need to be communicated. Like sometimes there are things that it's better that it's need to know basis. But on, I think what's most important is transparency when you're dealing with athletes. Mm. So like basically just don't bullshit a bullshitter. That's what it comes down to, because these guys aren't fucking stupid and they didn't come down in the first shower of rain. And when you give them some bullshit story about why one thing's happening or another, they go, "Bull fuck. That's not true." You know, so it's more about some things you like, okay, the reason I haven't communicated this is because it's not confirmed yet, or there's still a process to go follow, or there's still a reasons why that hasn't been communicated to yet. But if you ask me and that process is still happening, then I'll be transparent with you and tell you, this is why I haven't told you yet. And this is why I can't give you an answer yet. So it's more about being transparent in a lot of situations, I reckon. Don't bullshit, basically. Don't bullshit people.
How many more years do you reckon you've got before your bread rolls start getting a bit stale? Like you're talking about using it to your advantage, that you're fresh.
Yeah.
Really, it's a window of 2 years.
Yeah. Well, man, honestly, I think like every job in the world, like I think riders, you're a professional rider, you have a certain shelf life. And I do feel directors also have a shelf life. And so does a team owner of a team also has a shelf life. Like you can't continue to progress and to, like maybe you can have a longer shelf life, but I think for this, for your team to evolve and for the sport to evolve, like you do exceed your days eventually. Sometimes Father Time does come in and go, okay, there's, you know, I'm not saying that the directors that are older these days are, you know, but I think that you're seeing a lot of teams now like hiring a lot of younger directors, and it's not because the older directors are, well, or bad directors, but I think just relationship wise, being able to relate to the riders, it's, you know, sometimes the directors talk about, like we were at just last year, we had a Miguel Indurain, and some of the new young riders didn't know, they were like, why is this race called GP? Like, I don't want a name, you know, I don't want a name, but it was a young guy, and he came and he's like, what's like GP Indurain? Like, was it like, why do they call it GP Indurain? And I'm like, mate, do you not know who Miguel Indurain is? And he's like, Miguel Indurain, who's that? I was like, okay. So they can't relate to it. Like, and it's also, they just can't relate to those people. Like, if I like even say to the guys, like, oh, I rode with like Andreas Klode, Levi La Palma, Lars, all these guys, like once upon a time with Sam, they're like, who's like, the young guys, they're like, who's Klode and who's those guys? You like, actually realize like time has changed. Like, these guys, they're not looking at those guys. They're actually looking at like guys who we used to race, Stewie O'Grady, and them are still, even like Stewie's like kind of like, you know, some of them old know news. Him, but like they don't know. Yeah, they don't all know those guys. So
that's fascinating.
It's crazy, yeah. But like with the D, I think as you have a longer career as a DS, you just have different expertise. So like it's important to keep bringing in young DSs like every, I don't know, 5 years or whatever it may be, to have someone who's relevant and who's fresh out of the peloton and understands current day racing. But as you get older and further away from the peloton, you become a more experienced sports director. So you actually bring in different expertise, because, you know, we might bring the experience of the peloton, you know, and I'm 1 year removed now, Daryl's only 1 month removed. But we don't bring the experience of actually of being a DS because we're still fucking learning all that shit. For example, stopping on the wrong side of the road when you're trying to get a pie. That would never ever happen to an experienced DS, you know? Nah. And when I drive the car still after 1 year, I still make these fuck ups every single day because I'm not experienced. It's not second nature to me, you know. When I look at a race calendar from January to December with a whole bunch of races and 30 bike riders and try and plug folks 30 bike riders into all of these races and why, where it fits and what's happening after that and what's the lead and like I just see fucking great, you know, because I'm not experienced with that stuff. So that's where the older DSs are really, really important because they bring that experience. And that's what creates a group. If you have 8, 9, 10 DSs, you have all those areas covered and then you have a good DS group. That's kind of how it is.
And actually being on these DS calls, like I've sometimes there's been like problems, you know, proposed to the group, like, how do we fix it? And I'm like, oh, probably I would have just done that, you know? And then like someone else goes, oh, we can't do, like before I've even opened my mouth, someone's got like, oh, we can't do that because like, you know, then that will cause that and then that'll cause that. And you're like, oh yeah, I would have made a major like disaster there. I didn't think about all those other things. So you're right. I didn't mean to come across as like, you know, in with new guys, out of the old. But like I think relating to riders, like there's definitely a place, like you say, for the new wave to kind of new younger guys to relate to them. And then there's the other part where it's like there is experience to it. Like especially men driving, like driving.
But you're right. Like you're right. Nightmare. Like you're right. The reality is, you need to have young out of the peloton DSs. That's just the reality. Like if you don't have them, you're on the back foot, 100%.
Yeah.
So you're actually right.
Yeah, well, there's some parts like I remember even some races like going and they're like, I'm like, they've blocked the road. You can't get through. And they're like, what do you mean they blocked the road? It's like when blocking the road was a thing. They're like, what do you mean blocking the road? You're like, no, you just push past. No, you don't understand. There's like 2-3 teams blocking the road. There's no more space to go. Guys are riding in the gutter. There's absolute. And I remember directors going, well, what kind of story is that? Bullshit story. You can't get to the front. I mean, it's a neutral zone. And you're like, mate. Now if guys tell me like, oh man, I couldn't get to the front, the neutral zone is hectic. I'm like, oh, I used to race I understand you guys. Like, oh, that's fucked, you know, like that doesn't work. Like, you can relate to them more.
And the way cycling changed the last few years, it's just like, and it's going to continue like that as well, you know?
Yeah.
And
remember when Down Under was a holiday for some teams? They go, oh, here we go. We'll have a bit of fun down Adelaide. Like, everyone's ready to rock and roll. Like teams are getting there weeks in advance, getting acclimatized, training. Everyone's in good nick. There's no hiding anymore.
Mate, it's a world-class stage race.
Yeah.
At the end of the day. And it's
it doesn't even matter anymore.
Mm.
Like which kind of stage race it is. Look at us in like, we're going to these French races. There's like recon before. It's like the small French races, but we want to win and points are important and investing the time, you know?
That's where the point system, as shit as it was for the teams that got relegated, it's good in the sense that it keeps everyone on their toes.
Yeah. I mean, the good part is, I think the only shame of the points thing is, like, it just kills the small teams. Because now teams that are trying to, like, get positions and get points, that they're, like, soaking up all those races. And then it's, like, I mean, it's already... But the problem is as well, then you've got in the World Tour, you've got such strong teams too, like Jumbo and those guys coming with such a hit squad. Sometimes, you know, you're even racing for fifth or sixth and then you're kind of like racing for scrap. So then you're actually going to other races to try win because you're like, your sponsors also need some coverage. And if you're not winning anywhere, no sponsor wants to be involved with a team that's not winning anywhere. So it's like, teams.
That's where it feels a bit like that Drive to Survive series. We've got your top echelon of teams and then you've got this battle in the middle and then you've got these battlers down the bottom. It's just all these different battles going on.
There's a real cool stat that I think Corbin or one of the guys at Down Under said it after we won Down Under. Last year, there was only two or three teams, I think. I think it was Quickstep with Remco, UAE with Pogacar, Yatesy, and Jumbo. Those three teams won every single World Tour stage race in the calendar. So every single World Tour stage race was only won by three teams. So, like, for us, Israel Premier Tech, which is at the moment not a world tour team by, you know, official standards, to win a world tour stage race is fucking huge.
And to win back to back, it's massive.
That'd be even bigger.
Yeah,
it's only one rider. Oh, there's only one rider in the history of that down under that's ever been able to do that, Jonesy. So I think if they have him on his squad next year, you know, help with the directing again, you know, they've got a good chance.
Well, he knows the tactics on how to do it. Absolutely.
You know what the funniest part? No, you know what the funniest part of down under was? Like, in like a shitload of teams came to me and they were like, "Oh, Daryl, this tactic you're using, mate, is so like 2016, 18, like, you know, going for bonuses and all these things." And I was like, "Yeah, so, well, that's our game." But, you know, they were kind of like saying, like, "Oh, the tactics are old, but it doesn't work at down under anymore." And like, of course, okay, we won with a different person, but it was just so funny to see like teams just go like kind of go like, "Oh, these young guys, the directors, they just
go
for the old known tactic." You know,
But also, like, in the end, Stevie won the last stage, so it didn't matter. But when he took the jersey after Wollonga, why did he take the jersey, not Oscar Onley? Because of fucking bonus seconds and stage places. So, actually, it's still.
So, one thing the punters would know, you talked about before how the riders crack it over, you know, races that they get assigned to or whatever. How do you assign races for directors to go to? Because if I was a director, I'd be like, right, I want to go to the Canadian one-day races because you've only got 2 one-day races with a week, awesome accommodation. I want to go to places where I have minimal travel, awesome accommodation, minimal amount of days actually in the car racing, but a bigger block.
Yeah.
A lot of it – so the head sports director does it in our team. And he does it really well because he does. I don't really know the answer as to how he chooses, or how he sends directors to one race and not another. I think a lot of it is like local knowledge. You know, so like for me and Daryl to go to Down Under makes sense. We're both native English speakers. For Steve, the head DS, to go to the Canadian races makes sense because he's, you know, local knowledge, he's Canadian. For Oscar, the Spanish director, to go to the Vuelta makes sense. You know, like there's a lot of that stuff comes into play. For me to go to Catalonia makes sense because I've lived in Girona for 15 years. I think a lot of that stuff comes into play. For Sepp van Marck to go to the Belgian Classics makes complete sense. That's what his bread and butter was. He knows those races like no one else. I think there's a lot of that comes into play.
And experience, to drive the Tour de France as a director, like it would be foolish to say send me to the Tour, but yeah, to go be director there to drive, like it'd just be nuts. Mm. It's also experience thing, like whether or not you know the race that well. It's also like being able to handle the actual
stress of
how stressful it actually is, and like because you know the tour, everything is highlighted tenfold. You can go there and make a massive mistake, you know, there could be big repercussions. So like, yeah, I think there's also a lot of the reason behind it is that.
And when you go to a grand tour, you go with typically three DSs. In some cases, you might go with four. And then again, I don't know the answer, but I would hazard a guess that, you know, you look at, okay, there's going to be a group of three or four sports directors at the Tour de France or the Giro or the Vuelta. So you need someone who's really good logistically at things, because there is a lot of day-to-day logistics that need to be kept on top of, planned. So which sports director is really good at that sort of thing? So you might bring them into the fold. Strategically, who's really good? You might bring that into the fold. Who has experience of grand tours? Or who has experience in working or racing in grand tours where you're doing a GC or where you're going for stages? You know, so all of these little bits and pieces, I think, is how you probably look at it.
So how do they rank a director's performance? Like, you know, from a rider's perspective, you get results. But what if you're just a so-so director, but you've got a really good squad that are pinching all these races, and it's really, okay, well, you had a good squad. How did they get the feedback then on if you did a good job or not?
It's a good question.
It's difficult because there are, I mean, and it's only natural that you would want to ride who wins. Like, you would want to ride who does well. Nobody wants to work with someone that sucks. Just, okay, like, not achieving, not doing well, not finishing races, not, you know, and you just got to, yeah, or going to a race without an objective. Like, you always want to, you know, a hitter in your squad or an objective. But the reality is that's not always there. So, yeah, it is a tricky one because at the end of the year, when there's time to discuss a contract, and if you haven't been given a great team, or you've been doing a program like maybe the C program or say of the team, you know, some of the smaller races, and you haven't got anything, then it kind of can reflect on you badly as well.
I had this question.
Like, that's why we had a pretty shit squad at Down Under, and that's what makes Bules and I so good. So we turned it around.
Oh, you guys are killing it in terms of chatting at the end of the year for bonuses and shit.
Well, absolutely. That's what I was going to say. So a friend of mine asked me the other day, do sports directors, I mean, we all know, well, you know, if you guys don't know, the listeners, a lot of riders have bonuses in their contracts for winning races, you know. So if you win stage of the Tour de France, you might have a bonus of X amount of dollars.
Give us a ballpark. Come on, the punters want to know. If you were back in the day,
Darryl would know better than me.
Give us a ballpark. If you won a stage of the Tour, you don't have to give specific examples, but what's reasonable? 100 grand? Euro?
No.
200?
Less? I think 100 grand would be a generous bonus. It depends. It also depends on what contract you sign, because some guys actually sign for like, they've come off a bad 2 years or whatever, but potentially they can win a stage. So then they do have massive bonuses. Maybe they have like a 200 grand bonus. They go,
they sign for a team, remember?
So maybe if like you sign for a team, you go, like, listen, these guys want to offer me, I don't know, 50, 100 grand like to race this year. But I've got, if I go back to where I'm supposed to be and I win a stage in the like in the Tour, it's worth 200 grand. Or if I win a monument, it's worth half a mil, you know? But then I think the guys that are on probably getting what they're on already, like, you're probably looking at like 30, 50, you know, which is pretty generous. I wouldn't say more than that, but who knows, you know? And that's the problem with cycling, which I hate about cycling is nobody freaking knows anything. I've seen some of those numbers getting thrown around. I'm like, what?
It would be real interesting to see how the economics of the sport would work if it was open book.
Yeah.
Like if everyone had to declare how much they're paying their riders, it would be real interesting to the economics of the sport, I reckon, because there'd be a lot of teams going and a lot of riders out there going, fucking hell, I'm lucky. I'm getting paid well here. And there'd be a lot of riders going, I'm getting flicked here. And it would be... I don't know if it would be the right thing to do or the wrong thing to do, but it would be very interesting to see.
Do riders ever talk to each other about contracts? Like, how do you suck it out of someone? Like, over the years, do you go, come on, mate?
Out of all my good mates in Girona, there's only one guy that I've known his salary. I've never known, and I've never asked, and I never would ask.
Nah, it would have been George's. Couldn't
care less.
Come on, how much?
But have you ever been asked? Has anyone asked you like directly to say, come on, mate?
No one's ever asked me directly.
I remember everyone knew I made fuck balls, so now I'm bothered.
I remember playing golf one time when you opened up, but moving on.
I remember in Greenwich in my first year, I was on a 1 year contract, then I signed a 2 year contract, and I was like, Al Gossi was the guy I was like helping at that stage, you know, and he was like the head in the team, and I was just like, I've got to ask him, like, do you think this is fair or not? And then I told him what I earned. He was like, oh, I don't think so, mate. I think you've been a bit flicked here. And it wasn't from Green Edge, it was just the agent I was using at that time. And I kind of just went like, oh, well, and then I asked Stewie. I remember asking Stewie in the room, like, hey, mate, just want to double check, what do you think? And he was like, oh, Daz, I think your agent's done like a bit of a bad job there. And I'm not going to say who it was. But so then I kind of went like, oh, you know, I'll just phone Shane myself. And I was like, oh, hey, Shane, how's it going? And then we had a chat and whatever. And he was like, I was like, oh, mate, so, you know, I'm doing the Tour. And I've had like, I think I did, like, maybe. And then he was like, yeah, mate, let's do a new contract. Bang. Done. He's like, awesome. I said, oh, we don't have to deal with an agent. That's where Shane was really good. Like,
he's a legend. Yeah, with that.
He was really good at, like, valuing.
Shane's the general manager of the team, yeah, for people that don't know. Shane Bannon.
Yes, Shane Bannon used to run the team. And, like, from that perspective, like, I kind of felt like he was always, like, approachable in that sense. And not all teams are like that, that's for sure. Like, that doesn't go around. Like, most teams will let you see your contract out and then go, let's hope he has an okay year in the last year, and then we can kind of maybe keep him the same, or, you know, bump him up a little bit. It's very rare that, but those days, like, Greenedge was ripping up my contract with, I still had a year to go, most of my contracts, and then we're just doing a new one, which was always like, it's so motivating, because you're like, oh man, if I do well, they'll just change it.
But it was win-win both sides, because you were getting results at the same time.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, so I think
I did the same with Shane. In the end, I had a manager for a few years, and then in the end, I had no manager. I just did my own thing. And it was purely because the way Shane operated, I never felt like I needed to have a negotiating leg to stand on, because, like, he was actually just honest. He just made you an offer, and generally you were like, yeah, that's fucking yeah. You know, and I didn't need to give away an X amount of percentage of my salary to have that conversation. I could do that myself. There was only one time where I was, like, not as happy with the deal, but thankfully I had another offer that was pretty good from another team, so I was able to negotiate it myself and stay with the team. But
the old was, leverage.
Yeah, that was the only time in my career I had leverage once.
It's a slippery slope with leverage, though, is when you make up an offer that doesn't exist. You always get bit in the ass, yeah?
No, this was a legit offer.
Yeah.
Now, they talk. You'd be foolish to do that. These make no mistake. These directors talk and managers talk to each other. Go, hey. So-and-so says he was been offered $300,000 from you, and they're like, no.
What?
You know, they talk, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say that about, we got into the bonus thing before we went on about rider bonuses.
That was good.
Someone asked me, it was good. Do DSs get bonuses if you win? And I don't know if other teams in this team, well, at least I don't. And my feeling is that, like, we shouldn't. We actually shouldn't get bonuses because, for starters, it's our job. Mm. And if you do a good job regularly, you'll get paid more. Like, every single...
Mm. It all comes out in the wash.
Every single industry. If you work well and you work hard and you're there for a long time, you get paid more. Yeah. And at the same time, you know, we might go to Tour Down Under with a really good squad and we might win Tour Down Under. And at other points throughout the year, you might go to a race where it's a preparation race, or, you know, the leader is sick or injured and he's not there anymore, and the result's not going to be possible. So if you were to pay directors bonuses on victories from teams that we don't choose necessarily, it would create this animosity, I feel, amongst the group. Like, the only way you could ever do it is if you said, these are the team goals of the year. Boom, 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 boom. There's 10 goals. If we hit all of those 10 goals, there's a pot of X amount of dollars that goes to the sports directors, you know? Mm-hmm. But to get that pot and to split that pot evenly, you have to tick all of those goals, because every single sports director will be involved at some point in one of those goals. So that would be the only way to do it. But to pay individual bonuses, I think wouldn't make sense. That's how I look at it.
I agree. It's a no-brainer. It's funny where you hear stories, though, on the flip side, getting back to money and, like, contracts and that. The model is not – if you have an open relationship like you're talking about with Bannon and you feel comfortable or whatever, that is sustainable. And 9 times out of 10, you see riders perform above their capabilities because they're mentally – they feel supported and comfortable. On the flip side – geez, when you'd hear stories of Bob Stapleton at HTC, where he'd roll up to the Tour de France with a printer and be literally printing off contracts the day before the tour started, sign this now, or basically you won't have a contract next year. Just putting young, impressionable riders under the pump. Yeah, that shit's not sustainable. It's obviously not something that would go on now, but
Yeah.
Oh, there's still there's still tactics like that. Guys will just put that in offhand. Go, okay, you got 2 weeks to sign, and then they go. Yeah. And then after that, then if you don't sign it, we're done. And you're like, oof. So it forces riders. It forces riders to like, you know, a bird in the hand is worth more than two in the tree. So then eventually riders just go, oh, my agent hasn't got an answer out of this team, so I've got two more days. Hey, have you got any answers? And if nothing comes through, that rider just ends up taking it. Unless they feel, you know what, no ways, I back myself, I'm going to get a better deal. But it's very rare, especially in this world of cycling where it's so few teams, so little spots on teams, you don't want to muck around. You know, there's so many guys that are so good that are just willing to take your spot. So a little bit at the mercy of the teams too. And I think if teams, it must be hard for a team manager as well to play that tactic or that card, because ultimately you want to keep your riders happy too. You don't want to have a gun to everyone's head. But I guess managers also are stuffing them around, agents, you know, that are like trying to play the card. Now we've got this deal now. I reckon they've just gone, no, we have to do it this way so that we just get an answer and they're coming or not. Otherwise, otherwise you miss other riders, potential riders too.
I reckon in the last 4 years, the best story about contracts and second chances and all that is Clarkie not having a contract by January of 2022 and then winning a stage of the tour that year with Israel.
Mate, yeah. And Israel Premier Tech.
It's the best story.
There's some fucking actually awesome stories from this team. And I hope one day it comes out, but well, it's going to, because I'm going to tell you right now. But there's Clarkie, who didn't have a contract signed in January that year when he won a Tour de France stage. Yeah. And he's been fucking solid in every single race he's done since then. And he's one of the most valuable road captains you can have. There's Stevie Williams, who didn't have a contract in December 2022. He signed with the B&B French bloody team. Folded at the last minute. Didn't have a contract in December. Israel Premier Tech gave him one. He won Tour Down Under. Nick Schultz, same thing. 2 days before Christmas, I was on the phone to him. He didn't have a contract. B&B folded. Israel Premier signed him. Like,
you know, and all got three of those guys,
all three of those guys are huge parts of this team. You know, they're not just guys.
Not the replacements
around
with Gene Hackman. You know, those
parts of the team,
like Major League. You know, like these sort of guys that have just been thrown a bone, and then that's it. It turns around.
Yeah. So it's not just a retirement home. It's a fucking team that actually has a lot of belief in young dudes and has backed them. I mean, Clark is not young. He's old as shit, but he's fucking solid.
Man, these guys that talk about a retirement home, I mean, they're like, okay, we are the oldest team in the peloton, for sure. But like, when I see some riders, what they do out there, I'm like, it's because they don't have an old person in their team to tell them, like, what do you do? You know, like, you're getting these young teams like DSM and all these guys. Okay, they've got Deacon Colb and they're there. And I don't want to, like, point them out. But, like, you're getting some seriously young teams. It's like, guys just think it's, like, free will, you know, FDJ, all those guys. Like, man, there's, like, a system. And that's where this whole flipping peloton's lost its bloody respect and everything. It's just been, like, sometimes they're just not getting led by the right guys. And man, this experience is such a big part in this. Like, when you give, say, Simon Clark or someone like him a job to do Down Under, we're so calm because we know we've got an experienced guy to do it. And it's not to say that nobody else can't do it, but we just know he will be able to do it. You know, and that's what experience is, and you can't buy that. You can't fast track someone to do it. A lot of guys can get there. A lot of guys can do the job, but then maybe in the heat of the moment, they lose their cool. They're not waiting. They're not calm. And that just comes with time. And like, well, that's what Israel's actually done pretty well. Is like, if you think about the knowledge in our team, you think about how much knowledge our team actually holds over other teams, we're probably like streaks ahead of other teams, actually. Yeah, exactly. Like race smarts and that we've actually got quite a lot of guys. And then you look at even the directors, like we've got a lot of young directors and then we've still got like a lot of experienced directors. We actually got quite a lot of knowledge between everybody in the racing scene, you know, and quite current. Like, I mean, even Chell, who's our general manager, you know, he was racing. I mean, I raced with Chell, you know, so he's not like far away off the radar. So I think, yeah, I think I just basically think we got it, mate, at the moment. Yeah. We got the mojo. Well, man, I mean, look at us. We won in Rwanda now. We won in Rwanda. Actually, yeah. It was funny. The other day, I said, I'm going to hop on the call. They said, oh, you don't have to come at the 5 o'clock call. And I was like, I'll come on because I want to get a few winning stories, you know? And then literally I wake up and I'm like, logging on. I'm like, all right. You know, we won with on the weekend with Tom van Asbroek and everything. And I was like, all right, I'll hear this story. And then I'm like, oh, shit, it's my one today. It's like, it's so rare because, like, last year it took us till, like, I think it took May. Us to like May or something to get a win.
Yeah, our first race win last year was in May, and we've won five now. We've had a great start to the year.
Mm. Yeah. So where's the crystal ball, boys? What have we got to look forward to over the next couple of weeks?
Mm. Oh, Dan.
We got the sprint. We got the sprint group and the new sprint group in UAE at the moment. It's their first race together with Ackerman and Zabel Schwartzman. Kind of the new sprint group there. So they've been working hard, training together, and this is their first race. They did a good job yesterday, UAE, for their first race. So they're right up there. So I think it's going to be good to track them this week. Watch, you know, see how that group starts to gel in races. Always takes a little bit of time. But one was a pretty good start, I reckon, for them. And then we got
opening weekend, man. How can you forget opening weekend? Oh, that's coming up this weekend.
Opening weekend
Kern, Brussels, Kern, and whatever the other one is.
Head Folk or whatever.
Support whatever team you want to support, but fuck, opening weekend is one of the best weekends of cycling.
Oh, Belgians are just itching to get on the piss so good. Hard.
Did you see Jumbo's squad? Jumbo's squad was just like, how do you beat these guys here? Like, ridiculous. Like, that's just a hit squad. Mate, find me one shit park rider in that team.
I'll have a look. Hit news below. Yeah. Dylan Van Baal, Wout Van Aert, Christophe Laporte, Tiesj Benoot, Jan Trachten, Matteo Jorgensen, Eduardo Affini. Yeah, fucking hell, that's good.
Oh, Affini's a bit shit. He's such a good guy, Eddie. Eh? Eddie's such a good guy.
He's a great guy.
I love
guy.
Eddie. Yeah.
It's gonna be. It's a good.
It's like, how do you even pass those guys?
Nah.
Dylan Van Baal, Wout Van Aert, Christophe Laporte, Tiesj Benoot. Solid, eh?
I don't understand how guys like Van Aert can do the cyclocross and the road.
But he didn't do it this year. Really? Well, he did a couple, but he didn't do the Worlds or anything like that.
Van der Poel did, didn't he?
Yeah.
Fucking have a break, man. I can't work it out.
If I was probably making 50 grand at Crypto Started or whatever they make, I'd be doing the cyclocross season.
It's a good point. Good point.
I wouldn't knock that money back, mate.
Yeah, fair enough. It was pretty good.
I'll even come back from retirement for half that if they want.
If anyone has the slightest interest in cash, I think this will be right in their top echelon of episodes, this one.
This was a real different episode. It was quite serious in a lot of ways. Not a lot of but like it's good.
Is that because we're maturing or what is it?
No, I think it's just you get on a roll and we get into a flow and all of a sudden we're 52 minutes in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great.
That's what happened.
Yeah.
Should we get rid of George and then just slot me in? Yeah. What do you reckon?
Yeah.
I reckon we could get the Financial Review to sponsor us. Like, just
we didn't say anything that's going to get us cancelled or lose our jobs, no? I don't think so.
I think you went the other way and really did a good suck job on your team. I think you will get a bonus at the end of the year for this.
There's actually a couple of people from the team that listen to this. So you got to be careful what you say, you know?
Yeah, that's it. No, you're safe. Mm. Safe as houses. When are you off to Europe again, Imps?
I'm heading back in April. I got the Cape Epic before that in March, but I head to Europe in April. I'm coming to the Ardennes, and Sam and I will be back together.
Nice.
So that'd be good. Yeah.
And just before we wrap things up, mate, what is living in Sydney? Everything you thought it would be, or just give us your honest review?
No, it's good. Like, I mean, the kids are now settled in. I'm semi-settled. I'm still finding out what to do yet, but I'm enjoying it, mate. Like I miss South Africa for sure. I miss Spain. I miss all that stuff, but I can really see a good future here. So it's good. It's good, mate. It's been
good
great.
Coffee culture, yeah.
Good coffee not quite culture, like Melbourne, and you know what I found out? Like, there's just so much to do. The only thing that like pisses me off is like sport, man. Yes, if they could just leave like Sunday like non-sport, like everywhere. Like at least you can have like Sunday off. Because now it's like just like I just don't have a weekend. Like just up and down with soccer and other middle one soccer, then the middle one soccer, and then it's an hour away. And then you know what I've realized? Like Australian parents all think their kids are gonna be the next superstar.
And like, you're here to tell you give you're here to right. whack them with the reality bat.
No, honestly, like honestly, man, I just like some parents. I'm just like I'm standing at, like soccer, and I'm like, man, we're in the B squad here, which means we're not in the A squad in Australia, which means we're not going to go to Barcelona anytime soon. So like, just
get to the A first.
Just cool your jets and like you know let your kid just have fun for the moment, but. I think there's a lot of parents here that want it more than their kids, eh?
Oof. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's jeez. It.
They're everywhere.
I mean, that's everywhere in the world, but I think Australia's like, oof,
the worst?
Next level. Yeah. It's great.
You have to film some, Eames. Put the vision on your YouTube channel.
Yeah.
Just angry sports parents channel. That would go viral.
I wanted to punch this other coach from another team because he was shouting at his poor little players there. He was like just basically telling them, like, tackle harder. It's not rugby, but like, he was just telling them, like, tackle them harder. I'm like, man, you're not even talking about passing or anything. You're just talking about like attacking him. Don't lose that ball. Guards up. Lose that ball. It's like, mate.
Wasn't Chutney crutch, was it?
Chutney.
Jesus.
Good it's annoying. But otherwise, Australia's great. Like, oh man, what a place.
Seen any snakes yet?
No, I haven't seen any snakes. Loads of spiders. Then some people are like, my wife was first over get you, and it's just like spider. She's just there with the repellent, like, psh, 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 like around the whole house, like just. Like going to war, and then I've like told some people, the whole day we just like killed spiders. And the one guy was like, man, you need like take those things and put them in a jar and take them away. I was like, man, I'm not gonna touch that thing. Like,
fuck that.
I don't even know what I'm touching, so like, I ain't gonna touch it. I've heard there's so many poisonous things, so like, just give me some days, you know. But,
that's a good point. People that like are against killing spiders, like, sorry. Draw the line.
I am. I'm against it.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
What's the cut? Like, little ones you can kill. What about the big ones?
Big ones you can shoot them.
If I could move them out. But, you know, when they jump at you,
Mate, how many people die from a spider bite?
Yeah, but, like, listen.
Why run the risk, mate?
You might blow up in hives or something, but you're not going to die.
But if your wife says to you, listen, I can't sleep at night knowing that spider is somewhere in here, and it just carries on for days, and you can't find the spider. Eventually, you find it. You just think, well, let me just get rid of it. Like, and, you know,
the best of those videos where they've got like the dad who's trying to catch the spider on the roof, and he gets the ladder and the cup. I mean, and you go, this is only going to end one way. Because once he captures it, what are you going to do now, bro?
I think when you see a big huntsman on the wall. Like, I've seen a couple of huntsmen in my time. We got them in New Zealand as well. Like, I get it. You see a huntsman on the wall, it kind of gives you the shits because it's the size of my fucking hand.
Yeah.
But they're harmless, aren't they?
Okay, so you don't like snakes. I know you don't like snakes.
No, well, snakes, different story. Okay. I'll take a shovel to one of them things. No worries.
Exactly. Like a snake, I probably wouldn't kill a snake in my heart. I'd rather, like,
I wouldn't kill a snake either because I wouldn't go near the fucking thing.
But, like, a spider, like, sometimes I'm like, whoa, jeez.
You know, so that's why there's been those storms. You know the old wives' tale, you kill a spider, it makes it rain? No wonder fucking Sydney got flooded, pissed down with the big storm last weekend. Because Daryl went on a fucking spider-killing rampage.
I tell you, man, it came down here.
Mate, stop killing spiders up. And you'll be right.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, I want to get riding, so maybe I should stop. Yeah. It's just disclaimer. It's not me killing the spiders. It was my wife.
Well, this purely is the longest set we've done in a while because we don't have the George Bennett 39 minute. I'm over this, guys. I'm out.
Yeah,
we've got a stretch.
Yeah. No, normally George gets good. Like almost 39 minutes on the dot and goes
on the dot. Yeah. We're gonna get a whole new range of merch done, and one of those was like 39 minutes, and I'm out.
Yeah, good one.
Yeah. How's your merch going? Before we go, Dale, how do we get the Lekker stuff?
Mate, just always on Oaks, mate. But it's taken a bit of a back foot since I've been here. You know, I've had other priorities to sort out. But yeah, we're still going.
Well, fire it up.
Little website, my oaks.co.za. Then I've got a little store on Etsy.
What is it? Oaks
International.
Spell it out.
OKES.co.za. And then the other one is for my, you know, because I'm not like an international guru, yeah? So I just put it on Etsy. If you search Oak CC on Etsy, and then you'll see.
Okay.
Or Bileka. Or look for Bileka, you know, on...
Perfect.
On,
And what's the biggest move you got at the moment? The caps, the shirts, or they're all just flying off
the caskets. And the caskets are always the good one, eh? People love the caskets. So actually had a whole bunch of Aussies buy a whole bunch the other day. Yeah. So I'm kicking on you in Oz too, mate. They love it.
Perfect.
They're coming on some Bileka rods. You know, it's good. I've got a little club
Spider-Man.
Here. I've got like a little club here, you know, a little posse, a little community now.
Yeah, so perfect.
It's good. So if you're in Sydney and you want to find me on Link My Ride, mate, and then come join us on a ride.
Buy 10 bits of merch and then you can go for a ride with Daryl. That's how it usually works.
Exactly. Yeah, you got to spend at least $5,000 before you come.
Good stuff.
Ideally,
thanks for coming on, mate.
Ideally. And dollars.
Looking forward to
grand.
You guys smashing it. Yep. Anything you want to add before we wrap things up, Bules?
Nice hat, Bules. That's nice hat.
Thank you. Yeah, we've also got some merch. So go to Astro and buy it.
I love it how we cross reference all the time. It's
great. Always.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Nothing from me. Good show.
Like, share,
great show. Good to have you on, Des.
On you, Des.
Thanks, guys. Good to see you again.
It's nice to we've rewritten the, you know, we've, what did they say? We've remade the wheel in terms of cycling in this, just in 1 hour.
Perfect.
I think people love this app.
Any corporate speeches you guys want from us, let us know. We charge $10,000.
Yeah, they don't get bonuses. They need to make them up somehow, and that's merch, corporate talks, anything else.
Maybe we should just get all four of us just to like fly around the world and do podcast chats. And like you know,
huge market. Yeah,
I think so.
Yeah, I reckon. Sell out arenas. Yeah. Never mind Taylor Swift.
Oh shit! If Garen Thomas can pull a bloody crowd, so can we.
Yeah. I reckon you got a yellow jersey.
Exactly, and go off my
what was he wasn't the first guy in the UK to wear yellow jersey, was he? Whereas you're the first African.
Exactly.
So, who's he?
Exactly.
All right. Good finish, boys. We've really padded out that sign off. It's about 8 minutes.
Yeah.
Bye.
See ya.
Like, share, subscribe.